say that this is the bumpiest podium I've ever This is really good. Thank you so much for inviting me today. My original tradition was Baptist and then Pentecostal and charismatic. So I got into the habit of if it was all night, it was all right. So condensing this down to 20 minutes has been my great challenge. I was at a retreat yesterday. We had a day-long retreat. And I think I started at 9 o'clock or 9:30. And I looked up and it was 1:05. And the people were saying, "We need to eat. We need to eat." You know, and I thought it was about 10 o'clock, you know, because I'm just so used to getting on a roll and rolling right along. So I'm going to give you a short version today. I thought about what would be a good topic for this day and for this time. I live in Appalachia, right outside of the boundary between Tennessee and North Carolina. And it's an area that's been very hard hit by the economic crisis. And it's in an area where the people are poor, but people from Florida come up and live there. So that's where their summer homes are and, you know, their big fancy houses with the golden gates and all of this. Well, and so it skews the numbers at the end of the year. And so the area gets very little state funds because of the what we call the snowbirds. And so in our area, there's a great deal of fear about what the future will hold, fear about what people will have to offer their children, fear of dying sick without any health care, fear about how they will take care of their parents because they're now in their 60s or 70s and their parents are in their 80s and 90s. And so I was thinking about what our many, many masters across the traditions have taught us about fear and fearlessness and how we can choose which of these we will take upon our back. We admire those who are fearless, who stand in the face of adversity. They're unflinching, and I cannot think of a spiritual teacher who do not possess this characteristic of fearlessness. What is it that enables? No, I guess we could say that allows one to walk in such freedom, a freedom of personhood, regardless of what's going on, regardless of what's happening around us. How can we stand owned by no man? You know, a compassionate wisdom is a great part of this. Seeing others as oneself is the beginning step that we take. But a bigger part of it is the cultivation of what we call in Buddhism, abhya, becoming fearless, fearlessness. I live in North Carolina. When I was 13, I visited a friend in North Carolina. I was from Washington, D.C., when I got off the train and I walked down the street, a white lady walked up the street and we passed each other. I didn't know I was supposed to step off the sidewalk, so I didn't. But that night the KKK came to my friend's house for me. And the family that I was staying with had an old matriarch, you know, been there for a long time, and she'd worked the fields, and she said, now. So we don't want to start trouble down here. She's from up north. Let me take care of her, and it'll be okay. And they said, okay, make sure you do. And she took me outside, and she took a she said it was a twig, but I'm telling you, it was a branch, a limb off this tree, and she whooped me soundly in public. The next morning I was on a train back home, and I never visited North Carolina again. Somehow I end up, by my own free will, I'm still trying to figure this out, in North Carolina. My family won't come to visit me. And yet, this is where I have chosen to settle. And it has done something for me, healing something very, very deep inside, and released my personhood from a fear that I had back to when I was a little girl. One that I had covered over. I covered it over with accomplishment. I covered it over with education. I covered it. I covered it until I did not know it was there. And then I get into this place. And one day one of my Sangha members came to me. She said, just tell me how you're so brave to be here. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, the KKK meets right down the street. You know, some of them come in to your dormitory. I said, is that right? She said, yeah. So the next Sunday, I said, okay, we take our shoes off. I said, okay, I want everybody to keep your shoes on. Keep your shoes on. And they said, why? I said, because if I see any of you show up at my door in a white sheet, I'm looking down at your shoes and say, Johnny, is that you? And that was the end of it. And you know, at that moment, I realized that I truly had broken through my fear, because I meant it just as simply as that, just as harmlessly as that, just as jokingly as that, because I had considered all as oneself. And I know that for my own self, that I had certain views based on how I was raised, my culture, my background. And I have learned that that is the same for others. You know. And so if you want something to change, you can't point over there at that group or those people. But you have to get into the mix of it, because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. I mean, the whole town has completely changed around. It's been tough, but it has. But only because of my fearlessness, my unwillingness to flinch or to be afraid. And what I found is that there were many people who said, you know, some of the things we do, it's not right. Some of the ways we think, it's not right. Some of the conversations we have around the table, it's not right. But I've been too afraid to speak up and say to Uncle Bob, we're not going to have a discussion like that at my table. And so many people have found their freedom and their liberty, you know, from the courage of this little black girl who went down to the place that scared her. And so the Buddha teaches us something about power and corruption and fear. He said that it's not power that corrupts, but it's actually fear. Fear of losing power corrupts those who wield it. And fear of what the powerful can do to them corrupts those who are subject to it. And so he gave us a training in the four kinds of corruption so that we could go deep inside and know what it is that scares us. And we alone have to root that out. You know? He said, be a lamp unto your own feet and a light unto your own path. So we have to learn something, and then we have to learn to trust ourselves with that wisdom, that we can step out boldly and fearlessly. I'm heading to Thailand. As soon as I get back, I'm going to cut my tour a little bit short, because I have 15 nuns that I've ordained in Thailand. And I just got a night letter, and they said, we're not safe. Some of us have soldiers camped outside our door to protect us, because it's actually illegal for a monk to encourage a woman to take a leadership role in Thailand in Buddhism. You know, and but what that does to the whole society is that it minimizes the women. You know, they have no one to look to for solace, for guidance, for spiritual direction. The genders are so separated, you know. Families sell their girls to raise money to send their boys into the monastery. And they think that this is a karmic thing, that you were born a woman. And maybe next time you'll be born a male and you can be a monk too. Yeah. And so we need images. The girls, the women need images that say that they are important, that they matter, you know. And so it's very difficult to help set something like that in. And I don't mean in a meddling way, but just in a not an in-your-face way, but just gently behind the scenes, encouraging and letting women step into the freedom that they know is theirs. And so I need to go over, and I know some places I can hide them. I have some caves and I have some other places. Because these women have so much more courage than I have. I'm not sure I could do it if I was there. But I came because they called me. There's no one in the country who can do it. It is against the law. They will go to jail. And the monks that helped us there held a fan over their faces as the women took their vow. And they're beginning to rescue the girls from the slave trade. And so this is a very powerful work. But it shows what one can do when one considers others as oneself. So he said the first kind of corruption is chandagati. It's a corruption that's induced by desire. It's like a deviation from what you know is right. And you will accept or even pursue bribes for the sake of loved ones, for the sake of your group, for the sake of maintaining the status quo. It's caused by want and by fear of losing not just things, but losing the goodwill of those that one loves or admires or wants to be accepted by. I have an all-white sangha in this town. I am the only black person who crosses Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The only one. So the black folk don't trust me because I'm walking around on the other side of town. You know, so it's like you can't win either way, so you just go on. And in that freedom, now, I've been there since 2004. I see many people crossing on both sides of Martin Luther King. I work with the homeless. I take them, the kids. And I've had 75 that have lived with me in the past 3 years. 75. And when they came to stay with me, you know, can you imagine how desperate they must be to come into my place and stay with me? So hungry, so lost, so unappreciated that they'd even stay with a black woman. It's something, but it's changing a whole county. You know? And so they come in taking from me on one hand, or receiving what I offer and calling me names on the other hand. You know, but I didn't take it personally because I understood. I understood the conversations that went on in their homes. I understood the fears that were there, you know. And by giving them no one to push against, they came to know me as a human being. And they came to know themselves as human beings, capable of more, capable of love, capable of tolerance, capable of acceptance, wanting love, wanting tolerance, wanting acceptance, being love, being tolerance, being acceptance. And so from the children leading them, the town is changing. Oh, happy day, you know, for all. And so there's a new fragrance when you come down the highway and you're getting ready to take the exit to Hendersonville. That used to be a place you bypass. But now people come into the town because there's such a wonderful fragrance in the city. There's a change. There's a change going on. And it happens through the power of one. He said that another type of corruption is dosagati. It's taking the wrong path, going in a way that we know is not right, but we do it to spite those against whom we bear ill will. I had to wrestle with this dosagati when I got there. Sometimes when I was slighted, it was a bit more than I felt that I could bear. But what sustained me was my daily vows. I'd get up in the morning. I vowed to avoid killing living beings. I vowed to avoid taking what is not given. I vowed to avoid sensual misconduct. Sensual misconduct. Not being carried away and reacting because of what I see or what I hear or what I taste or what I touch or what I smell or what I sense or what I think. These are the vows I made them. I made them to myself, not to anyone else. If I miss them, I miss them to myself. If I keep them, I keep them to myself. But I remind myself who I want to be on a daily basis. Sometimes it was hard to hold my peace, but I did. Now it's not so hard. Actually, it's pretty easy to hold my peace because I've truly changed. Not just wanted to change, but truly changed inside. And so this dosagati, this fear of being humiliated or injured, or sometimes it's just the fear of being surpassed by someone else. You know, it can even be something as simple as keeping up with the Joneses. You know, it could be just not letting someone else know how vulnerable we are, and so we contrive and we devise things. Or we put them off, or we point up something in their life to divert attention from our own. But there's a path of accepting defeat and giving the victory to others that is truly liberating. And it takes us beyond all of our conceptual ideas of what power really is. In the 60s, I didn't participate in the Martin Luther King movement because I wasn't nonviolent. It was a bad time to run up against me in the 60s. But I'm changed. I'm different today. By my own effort. So that's the thing. It takes our own effort to do this. And when we have pulled ourselves up by our own effort, we know that we're up. We don't have to guess about it. We know exactly where we are. We know exactly where to find ourselves. And if we have the right tools, the right skillfulness, when we find ourselves a little down, a little below where we want to be, we can pull ourselves up by our own inner desire. What desire? To accept others as oneself. We're interdependent. We come up in a country where there's a great sense of independence. But no man is an island, and none stand alone. This is a truth that we learn if we walk long enough on this earth. And the fourth corruption is mogagati, and that's just due to confusion. It's fear based on not knowing. On being constricted and having contracted awareness. So, but perhaps the worst of the four is bhayagati. That's a corruption, an inner corruption, due to fear because it stifles and it slowly destroys our sense of right and wrong. You know, we read about some of the big corruption schemes that happened over the last few years. How in the world did this happen? These are people who were trustworthy. These are people who were honest. These are people who made a pledge to bring prosperity to their families, to their friends, to their neighbors, and a great amount of trust was put into them. How did it go so wrong? How, it was so subtle that they didn't even know themselves until they were caught up in it, and no way to turn around, no way to stop, and they just tried to get more money so that they could straighten out the mess and be done with it. But in all the getting, it was never enough, you know, until finally a father would go to a son and say, "Son, I'm a fraud. I'm too far in. I can't get out. And I've hurt you. I've hurt my family. I've hurt my friends. I've hurt those who have trust in me." And it was a domino effect. One after another fell. But the Buddha said that this is a kind of fear that stifles and slowly destroys our sense of right and wrong. And it's difficult to dispel this kind of desire. This is a desire to be accepted, a desire for things, a type of greed that is insidious, but it's so subtle. And so he said, to dismantle this, we have to acknowledge it. So every day I check inside to see, where is greed growing in the dark spaces? And if I see it, I work to root it out. You know, we must put into action our assent for standing for what is good and what is true. If we don't, this kind of fear grows. Things get out of hand. They get too big for us to be able to say anything about. And even though we may not feel it's right inside, we sit there with our hands folded as if there's nothing that we can do. So he says, take care of these matters while they are small. Stand for what is good and what is true. In India, the work I do with the untouchables, they're called the Dalits, that means broken people. They are the untouchables, and the other group is the unmentionables. And it's 1/3 of India. So we talk about how democratic India is, but 500 million of its people are classified as non-human. They're called the non-humans. And I can't begin to tell you what it felt like to be with them, to just touch one of them. If their shadow falls on upper caste people, those people have to go home, take a shower, and wash their clothes because they are considered to have been polluted. A beautiful people. It's hard for me to even distinguish who's who, but it just comes down through family lineage. And if they just ask, what village are you from, then they know whether you're Dalit or whether you're upper caste. And I couldn't imagine anything like that until I went there. And with all of my stories I could tell, nothing comes close to this. And so I go there to help build wells, because in their villages they don't have access to water. They do have water, but it's the wastewater that runs down from the towns. And they cook in that wastewater. They eat food grown and watered by that wastewater. Their children bathe in that wastewater. And they're very sick with boils and tumors, and where the body's trying to isolate. And this is the group that I work in. Why do I do it? For this reason alone. I contemplate this every day. The Buddha said, I am of the nature to grow old. There's no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There's no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone that I love are of the nature of change. They are impermanent, and there is no way to escape being separated from them. So my actions, they are my only true belongings. My actions are the ground on which I stand. Reflecting deeply on these truths will help us overcome fear.